Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am going to hit a topic a little different today, and I hope you find it interesting. And we, of course, got a good guest to come on and help us with it, because you know what? I like to tag team this and give you as much as I can in the limited time we have together. So, President of Milia Advisory Group, Greg Milia, is on the line with me. Did I pronounce that right? Is that right?
You did well, Dave. Milia? You did okay. Better than most.
All right. Well, welcome, Greg. I'm glad to have you. Before I continue the introduction, I didn't want to butcher your name. MiliaAdvisoryGroup.com. We're real happy to have Greg on the line. He's got a very substantial background, done a lot of work with individual investors since 1989. That's a good run. That's a good run, Greg.
A long time.
Yeah, you paid your dues, I'm sure. You've been helping a lot of folks. And so you're down in this like I am. You know, you're a financial advisor and you're doing a lot of work. You're in Oklahoma.
That's correct.
All right. Well, I appreciate your taking some time to be with us. And I'm really curious to get your insights about a couple different subjects. And I know that one thing in particular you've been following, which I definitely would like to talk to you about, which will surprise people, and that is about student loans that senior citizens owe, drumroll please, $18 billion in student loans. So while
amazing?
That's amazing. So while they're supposed to be thinking about their retirement and planning for that, a lot of people, $18 billion worth, still have debt, student loan debt. That's just staggering to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. And as you know, a lot of that came from the 2000. You know, when the market crashed in 2008, there were a lot of seniors, a lot of jobs lost, and so they were forced into trying to reinvent themselves. So
yeah.
Going back to school was one of the options they took.
Oh, that's a good point.
Kind of interesting, too, on the student loan side, and I know you know this as well, David, the government, as far as, you know, the program initiated in 2010 when they basically took over the student loan program and pushed out most of the private organizations that were doing the student loans and made the qualifications much simpler to qualify for those loans. You know, the idea behind it was that they would press the dollars into a lot of student hands because they would spend the money, kind of a hidden quantitative easing of sorts.
Right.
And the student loans just skyrocketed through the roof when they did this. But what happened in the meantime, as you know, as we were talking about, the seniors also participated, which I think was kind of an unforeseen. I don't think that was an expectation to occur.
Well, my first, you know, when I read the kind of the headline on this, I thought, well, okay, so it must be seniors got caught with guaranteeing loans for their kids or grandkids. And what the statistic I think you shared, it was 80-some percent was from the seniors themselves taking these loans out.
Yeah, isn't that surprising?
It really is. Interesting.
The hard times when you suddenly lose your job, and if you didn't save for retirement and you're trying to figure out a solution, well, that was a solution for some of them, I guess.
What's going on with default rates? Are we seeing any type of trend there?
On the student loans?
Yeah.
I think they're up a little bit. But, that's one of the critical issues with the problem with the student loans is you can't file bankruptcy on those. So, you know, you're reading stories of some of these seniors actually getting their Social Security checks confiscated or by the government.
Wow.
Which is really crazy when you think about that.
This is kind of soaking in a little bit. That's really, talk about a pervasive impact. Now I don't know how you feel about this, Greg. I'm kind of one of those people that if you got a debt, you pay it, you know, and you need to make good on what you borrowed. But I understand, you know, people were hit very hard, and this debt's hard to get out from underneath, especially when people are moving into retirement and trying to grapple with it. Are there any strategies at all that these people are looking at or things you're seeing that people are trying to do to get out or deal with it?
Like you said, there's not an easy solution here. Carrying into, in your senior years when you know physically you're going to have a limited span of time to work. Physically, at some point, you're going to become incapable of working, creating an income to pay those debts.
Yeah.
So it really can create some additional hardships for somebody entering retirement, especially if they suddenly incur some health issues that require them or prevent them from working, then you really got a problem for them.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, and I imagine you've seen with this, Greg, that some folks are perhaps because of that garnishment you referred to with Social Security. You're seeing people maybe tapping into other investment accounts before they should or before they could if they didn't have this, and maybe even having to pull money out of retirement, qualified accounts, 401k, 403b, things like that, to help make ends meet or even to help pay down the debt.
Yeah, I'm sure there's all of the above going on with, you know, with somebody stuck in this kind of predicament.
Sounds like it's a difficult thing to get out of.
Yeah, I as I said, being late in life, you know, this, which is really kind of interesting in the whole span of the universe and the way debt and finance works, because you know as well as I, as people retire, they tend to shun debt, and it was kind of an unusual twist. But again, it makes me wonder how many of those that actually took that position had other resources to pull from, because why'd they go into debt at that point?
That's a good point. Well, it's,
you know, they had the savings. I mean, you could make an argument they did that instead of pulling money from retirement accounts, but you know, if you're without a job, you could pull the funds out without too much of a tax consideration. So I'm not really, it makes me think that probably they were in a position where they felt like they had to out of necessity.
Well, this is a big deal. Government Accounting Office, you know, the numbers are big. It from 2005 to 2013, student debt among seniors 65 and over older rose by more than 600% to $18 billion. That's a big number.
That's a big number.
Well, I tell you what, it's something we'll have to keep tabs on. And the default rates, it's only 12% of student loans between 25 and 49 were in default in 2013. But then it goes, when you get to the older from 65 to 74 age bracket, then it really starts to spike and goes up to 27%. And then for people over 75, it's 50% default rate. So one in two over 75, I guess at that point, if you haven't paid it off, then there's a high risk of default. Those are some sobering statistics.
Yeah, those are. I just can't imagine being in retirement years trying to juggle something like that. I mean, you got enough stress and concern. Just a lot of folks just making ends meet these days, and having to worry about that over your head coming in.
Well, if you're just joining us, Greg Melia is our guest, president of Melia Advisory Group, and the website meliaadvisorygroup.com. And we'll grab a quick break. We'll come right back with Greg.
Here's a newsflash. All financial advisors are not created equal. Some invest in their education by getting advanced degrees and professional certifications. Some don't. Some advisors get multiple licenses and offer a wide range of solutions. Some don't. Some advisors choose to be independent. Some don't. Some advisors disclose how they are paid and the fees they charge. Some don't. Please don't settle for a don't. Let me introduce you to independent advisor David Holland. David is a CPA, a certified financial planner, a personal financial specialist, and a chartered financial consultant. With 23 years financial experience, David offers a wide range of personalized solutions and discloses all fees in writing. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Fellow financial advisor on the line with me, Greg Melia, president of Melia Advisory Group, meliaadvisorygroup.com. And I wanted to get to another subject, if we could, Greg, get your thoughts on this, and that is there's a recent Wall Street Journal article back at the end of November. Portfolio managers girding for volatility amid expected rate increases. So there is this potential, although I'm not sure how quickly it's going to happen, but there is the potential for when rates do start to go up, that certainly can have an impact on those bond portfolios. So it looks like the bonds are starting to increase, the bond portfolio managers are starting to increase their cash position. Are you seeing this? I know that you do a lot of work on the fixed income side and helping people develop and build those portfolios. What are you seeing from the portfolio managers with this trend?
Well, you are seeing that it's as high as what it was back in 2007, the highest now. It hasn't been as high since 2007. So you are seeing that they are stepping up their cash positions, you know, in preparation for, you know, interest rates coming up and being ready for outflows, so they don't have liquidity positions to create cash. So it's kind of, for me, it's also one of the, which in turn, if they're building cash, you know, it's a little over 6% now the holdings are in cash,
and right.
It's also weakening, obviously, their
yields. Yeah, it's diluting your returns.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that creates an, which for me has always been one of the problems I've had with bond mutual funds, the inherent weakness with them. You know, because if you actually own the bond, and we focus on actually bond ownership with our clients, if they want bonds, we want to go out and buy those, and it takes a lot more work. For me, mutual funds, I tend to call them kind of the disease of ease, because it's just, you know, they've kind of taken over the industry. They're easy. They're simple to do. But you know as well as I, if you own a bond, you're going to get a fixed rate of return. It's not going to change. And if you hold it to maturity, then you'll get your dollars handed back to you. So, yes, your values can drop if interest rates come up. But typically, if you're going to hold to maturity, which all my clients, that's what I want them to do, is to hold to maturity, then we're just going to simply reinvest the higher yields down the road.
Yeah.
Bond mutual funds, as you know, you lose those two advantages.
So, yeah, the big concern that people need to have as we enter a rising interest rate environment, which we can and probably will, is the good old inverse correlation of interest rates to bonds. And you know, as you know, Greg, the further out you get on that bond, as you mentioned, the price is going to be affected when rates go up. And that's all understood. And if you hold the maturity like you talked about, you can avoid experiencing that, the consequences of the devaluation, basically a loss on the bond if you get out early. The problem, as you know, Greg, that people need to be careful of and aware of is that with a bond mutual fund, you don't have that kind of control.
Yeah, I agree. That's one of the inherent weaknesses of the bond mutual funds. And most people I talk to are not really aware of that issue. And it sounds like we agree as far as interest rates, and I actually don't see them, you know, increasing anytime soon. In fact, we're watching, it's kind of interesting, if you look at the 10-year treasury notes of Italy and Spain, they're actually lower than ours. So our 10-year treasury notes paying slightly more than Italy and Spain. Now, in 2008 and 2009, everybody thought that, you know, nobody would have considered that their economies are stronger than ours, but yet today here we sit that ours is paying a higher rate of interest. And then, you know, with the Eurozone slowing down, we're looking at deflation entering the picture, that the buying, it looks like you're seeing a strong buying for our treasury note, which is going to keep, obviously going to keep our rates down, I believe, for some time yet. I'm not really terribly worried. So I think the end result was they'll dilute their earnings on those bond mutual funds and really not help the client that well or help them that much.
Yeah, you raise a good point about some of the international countries and what we're seeing. Germany, last number I looked at was their yield on their 10-year equivalent treasuries was down below 1% at 0.7% yield for a 10-year period. I mean, that's pretty low.
You,
I think
some of the banks that I was reading today in Germany are actually going to negative interest rates where they're going to charge you to have money in the bank account.
Yeah.
It's just mind-blowing, just hard to...
Hard to imagine that, isn't it?
It's incredible.
Well, in Japan, I think, is the world leader for lowest yield, down below 0.5%. 0.4% is what they'll pay for you to lend them money for a 10-year period. That's pretty remarkable.
Well, I think the interesting thing, too, is that we really are facing a structural issue more than we are a cyclical. And they treat this like the government, in my opinion, is treating it like a cyclical. When you've got a generation, two-thirds of this economy has come from spending, and, you know, the baby boomers have been this engine for years. Now, they hit their peak, I mean, according to some, depends on which economist you read, but the average is somewhere around 2007, because, again, as a whole, they tend to slow that spending down as they approach retirement. We've got, 11,000 baby boomers hitting Social Security a day now?
Yeah.
So they're not looking to buy. They're not looking to. You can lower these rates all you want with the quantitative easing. You can do all the things, but you're not really going to. You're not going to make people go borrow money, and that's what we're really seeing happen. Nobody's really borrowing the money, and so now then, which leaves you dependent right on the next generation, and that generation. You know, we've got more on government assistance than we've had in the history of this country. So we're really in a. Same thing, it's the reason you brought Japan, kind of, it just jogged my memories. We're really looking like a Japanese market if you go back in history. Their baby boomers are about 10 years older than us, and, you know, they've done the quantitative easing, in fact, to a larger degree than we have. And they've had interest rates, you know, around 1%, Dave, 15 years now?
Yeah, it's not pretty. And now it's, They had their a strong market year, of course, 2013. They had the number one stock performing index in the world, I believe, over 50%. But they've slipped into another recession, as I understand it, and they've got a lot of challenges there. Thing that's it is interesting to watch, and we'll see how it develops. Yeah, the rates, what's going to happen, you know, kind of back to the point, it really is something that we have to pay attention to, especially when you look at what the bond fund managers, and the point I was making, Greg, and I'm not opposed to using bond mutual funds in what I do. However, I'm very careful about that because you don't have the control that you do with individual bonds about the selling. And by very definition or by its very existence, a bond mutual fund manager, they're going to buy and sell. And so you better be very aware of your maturity and how long of a bonds are being purchased inside of that portfolio that they may potentially sell in the future. So it's something that, you know, if you do, there's nothing, you know, the different approaches, and I understand you take the more of an individual bond approach, but it's just that people need to understand that these things, there are pieces to this that can come up and bite you. And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be very surprised if interest rates go up, say 1%, and they've got this bond mutual funds, it's a longer term bonds. You know, they're going to see a real drop in value, and it may be a realized drop, a real drop, not just on paper.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, one of the misconceptions out there is literally people believe bond mutual funds are as safe as conservative as almost
right.
as bank money. They hear the word bonds and they think, wow, I've got some safety here.
Yeah, that is
a
misconception.
In 2008, they dropped by 30%.
Yeah.
And I know there's some advisors had some hard conversations with their clients back then trying to. And of course, they got rescued because rates actually went lower.
Mm-hmm.
How much lower can they go from here?
I just can't see them go. I know it's a bit of a rhetorical question, but no, I don't think they can.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I just don't see them going much lower. So.
All right, very good. Well, if you're just joining us, Greg Melia is on the line with us, Melia Advisory Group. We'll take a quick break. Come back with Greg. Stay right there.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Then maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary. What's a fiduciary? That's a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. Being a fiduciary also means that the advisor should recommend the products and services he believes will best serve his clients' needs, not what an insurance or investment company tells him he has to sell. So next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, are you a fiduciary? The answer should only be yes or no. If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer is probably no. This public service announcement has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Talking about interest rates and the effect on your bond portfolios and what could happen there. Greg Melia is on the line with me, president of Melia Advisory Group, and the website, meliaadvisorygroup.com. Let me ask you this, Greg. What are some of the things that you're doing with, because I think it'd be helpful for my listeners to get a little different perspective. What do you see in terms of some of the opportunities out there? You're building your portfolios with a combination of different securities, not just bonds, correct? You're using a mix of different securities?
Yeah, that's right, Dave. I mean, there's several things we're working with, everything from, you know, definitely on the individual bond market side, you know, you also have your municipal positions as well, individual there too, municipal bonds. There's a lot of fear on some of those because they hear of Detroit and Chicago, but the reality is the overall, you know, default rate on municipals is extremely low. It's kind of like an airplane crashing, you know, they don't crash very often, they do, it makes frontline news and everybody's afraid to fly. And then REITs, real estate investment trust, prefers with preferred stocks, and then a mixture of, if they really want some safety, some fixed or indexed annuities, and just a combination of all those. We're all about the income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my clients are approaching retirement or in retirement, and it's all about income. How much can I take out and not run out? If I'm not needing the income, then let's use it to buy additional income streams for the future. And, because if you, you know as well as I, if you have the income, then and the market drops, you're not worried about selling assets. And overwhelmingly today, when people walk into my office, what I see is that most advisors have them so heavily in the stock market that, you know, the advice, and I'll never forget a gal that came into my office, it's probably been 8 years ago, literally just absolutely crying. She started to tell me her story because she had, the advisor told her to just sell shares of mutual funds because the stock market, you know, what most people don't realize is if you look at the S&P 500 now since 2000, it's a little over like 23, 24%. Well, you know what you get when you divide 23, 24% by 14 years?
Not much.
yeah. And so, and nobody, everybody wants to talk about how great the market's doing, but the reality is it's in 2000 we gave up half. In 2002.
Right. You got to keep some perspective.
You have to keep that in perspective. And most advisors say they preach the stock market and that stay the course, hold on. And the reality is if you've been doing that for 14 years, you've not even kept up with inflation.
Yeah.
So all that to say is that somebody that's in a position where they have to sell assets to create income, you know, we, you know, want to be in the fixed income world where the income comes in. Even if the assets drop in value, they can still count on the income, still spend it and live on it.
Well, if somebody's in a position, Greg, and this for all of our listeners out there, you know, if you're in a position where you're having to liquidate funds, stocks, mutual funds, things like that in order to get the cash flow, you are asking for trouble. I'll put it that way, because when the market does come, you know, you have to sell your stuff when it's on sale, and you don't want to do that. You want to buy on sale, not sell on sale.
Yeah, we call it reverse dollar cost averaging, because you know as well as I, as the market drops, you're selling more and more principal to create the same income.
I've got a term for you, Greg. Yeah, I've got a term for you. Not only is it reverse dollar cost averaging ready, it's dollar cost ravaging.
I like that. I think I'll steal that from you.
Yeah, feel free.
If you'll give me permission, I won't be stealing it.
I have a few forms for you to sign, some royalties to create, but sure. No, but you know, in all seriousness, that's exactly what it is, because you are ravaging the portfolio when it's down, because you've taken it out at the worst possible time. So you're right, and I agree 1,000% with your approach that we need to create income that you can count on, that whatever way you do it, be it bonds, annuities, whatever the combination, however you do that, but you need to be able to take that reliable stream of income so that you're not having to take it out. Because if the market drops, you know, let's say it dropped 20%, which can happen. If that happens and you've got to take money out, it's costing you, what, $1.20 roughly to get a dollar, and that's not a good financial strategy. You don't need to be a financial planner to know that.
Yeah, well, in 2009, it was more like 60%.
Exactly.
You know, we had a 60% drop, and there were a lot of people, you know, I know a few people working at Walmart and being, you know, just because and that's right. Honestly, what happened, the reason the guy was crying in my office is because the advisor told her, don't worry about the market, don't look at it.
Yeah, just write it out, right?
Just write it out, sell the shares, you'll be okay. Your money lasts the rest of your lifetime. The rest of her lifetime was 11 years later when she's literally, you know, crying in my office. And it was really a sad situation. And one of those poignant meetings that I'll never forget. And what I preach and teach, as I know you do too, as far as you don't want to sell assets to create income.
No, it's not the way to do it. Now, you can get away with that if the market's on a big bull market tear and everything keeps going up and up and up and you don't notice it. You keep taking money out, your account, you know, keeps going up. And we saw people experience that in the late 90s, and I'm sure you recall that, Greg, and also again, briefly from 2003 to 2007. So there's a natural, and I remember like it was yesterday back in that late 90s when people were like, you know, I'm investing and it keeps going up and this is a beautiful thing. And it was just free money, right?
Yeah, well, it was. And then those who have retired in the last couple of years may be in that same position where they think they're safe because they're taking money out. And lo and behold, at the end of the year, they've got what they had or maybe a little more.
Right.
But, you know, if you look at this market and where it's positioned with, you know, our long-term unemployment has not changed much since 2009. We're at 36 years low on our workforce, what we call workforce participation. You know, the unemployment numbers they use are just those drawing unemployment.
Yeah, right.
Statistically, we're not good shape employment-wise. Now, we saw some better numbers this week, but still overall, I'm very uncomfortable with the current state of the economy.
Well, you know, the strategy we were referring to about people taking money out of their accounts for income, you know, having to liquidate stocks and mutual funds, It's a dangerous game, and I'm sure you know you may have heard Warren Buffett's quote that you see who's been swimming naked when the tide goes out.
It's one of my favorite ones.
So, I mean, that's what's going to happen. The tide's going to go out, and there's going to be some people that are, let's just say, exposed, and they're going to get caught with their pants down because it's not good. That's not what you want to do.
Yeah, I could not agree more with you.
So, you know, I'd be curious, Greg, again, it's something that people don't necessarily think of right off the bat. What are you seeing for dividend yield on preferred stocks? I heard you mention that earlier as part of what you do. What kind of return or what kind of yield, what kind of cash flow are you seeing?
We want to stay in the, somewhere in the 5 to 6.5%, somewhere in that range where they're. We have there's a big difference. It used to be the risk spread premium between preferreds and bank money was usually about 3 points. Today it's closer to 4 and 5.
Okay.
Exceedingly high.
Okay.
Again, it's all about we're looking for the fixed income. Most of them, what I find is when people enter retirement, if they have enough income to take care of their needs, and then, we always strategize that you have three things coming your way. If you're not retired, there's three. One is the day your active income ceases.
Right.
Two, inflation will slowly squeeze your income. Three is that there is going to be a substantial loss of income at death. At a minimum, a Social Security is gone. Check is gone.
Right.
So you've got to be able to plan for those three eventualities to have a successful retirement. And we want our strategies to line up with those three goals. And what I see is, again, most people walk into my office, their strategies do not line up with those goals. It's their natural goals, what they want to happen, but they've never stopped and really thought about, what strategies do we use? What are the goals we need to try to accomplish? And then what strategies? Because, again, most advisors, sticky mutual funds, they retire, market average is 7 to 8%, stay the course, hold on, don't get out of the
boat. Good grief. How about a little planning? How about that? That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Good stuff, Greg.
Something along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with a lot of people, and I know you have too, and every plan's different, and you got to dial it in and get what's right for the person, and that's what financial professionals like Greg and I do. So, Greg, I'm glad to have you on the program. It's been helpful and insightful, and Greg Melia, ladies and gentlemen, president of Melia Advisory Group, meliaadvisorygroup.com. Good to have you on, Greg. We'll have to have you back.
All right, Dave. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.